You're listening to DraftKings Network.
You're tuned in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, guiding your gridiron journey, none other than your host, former NFL lineman, Ross Tucker.
Oh, yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. It is a teaching tutorial Thursday, which means class is in session with our guy, Greg Cosell. We're talking tight ends and running backs, not as many great prospects, either one of those position groups. So we decided to go ahead and combine them with the civilian GOAT. We will get to Greg momentarily. Absolutely love a Greg Cosell Thursday, just like I love DiGiorno, especially with March Madness starting back up again tonight. DiGiorno knows that planning a watch party on a budget isn't easy. You need the perfect setting, perfect squad, perfect eats. Luckily, you're a game time mastermind, and you know that grabbing DiGiorno Classic Crust Pizza can bring home a dub because it's packed with half a pound of cheese, sauce, other toppings, and comes at an incredible price. Make the game-winning call and grab a DiGiorno Classic Crust Pizza from the grocery store today. It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno. It's Big Show time.
The Big Show.
Well, we don't often do this, Greg, and I guess it says something about the running back and tight ends in this year's draft class that we're actually combining the two, which good timing, by the way, because these are positions that get talked about a lot when it comes to positional value, which I think is a good place to start with Georgia tight end Brock Bowers. I know we're going to get into a couple tight ends and then several running backs in what, as we discussed a little bit last week when we were talking about free agency, is not thought to be a great NFL draft running back class. But let's start with Brock Bowers. And I guess I just want to hear first, Greg, like what you see from him, what you think he is. I've been looking forward to getting your breakdown of Bowers.
Yeah, I mean, my sense is, Ross, that he's not going to be very polarizing. You're dealing with a guy that is just a really high level receiver that can line up anywhere in the formation. I made the note when I was watching him that so much stands out, and I watched his tape last summer from 2022. I watched his tape this year from 2023. It's almost difficult to focus on one particular trait, but he's got really soft yet strong hands. He catches almost everything away from his frame. And he has this just unique ability to seamlessly transition to run after catch. And run after catch is a really high-level trait of his. I mean, we're at the point in the league where a lot of people think in terms of offensive weapons more than a position. You know, we heard Brad Holmes talk about that a year ago when they drafted Jahmyr Gibbs. In some ways, Bowers is very similar. He's more of an offensive weapon than a traditional tight end. He's got unbelievable open field balance and strength and elusiveness. He's got long speed. He's a really good route runner. You know, when you talk about just the receiving element to his game, there's very, very little that he cannot do. And I have to tell you that I thought in terms of blocking, he put in effort. He was only 243 pounds. I don't think you're drafting him to say you're going to be an attached tight end that we're going to ask to block defensive ends on a regular basis. It'll probably have to happen sometimes, and he'll work at it, and he'll probably be okay. I remember having a conversation with a coach who was on the Kansas City Chiefs when they drafted Tony Gonzalez, and he told me that Gonzalez was a poor blocker when he came in the league, but he was really willing to work hard at it, and he became a more than serviceable blocker when he was asked to do so. And my guess is Bowers, that will end up being the case with Bowers.
Are there concerns about him, Greg? Are there knocks on him? Are there reasons why he's not a slam dunk top five, top 10 pick?
Well, you know me, Ross. I can't sit here and say where he'll get drafted, but I don't see concerns with him as a player. You know, one of the things when I watch players, as you know, is I think about how they'll be deployed in the league. So, you know, if I'm watching a running back who's 185 pounds, let's say, just for the sake of discussion, I don't say to myself, well, a weakness is the fact that he's not big and powerful. Well, of course he's not big and powerful. He's 185 pounds. So with Bowers, I think if you understand what he is, which is really high level with the traits that he possesses, then there's not really a weakness in his game. Now, having said that, much of it is team-specific, scheme-specific. I can't sit here and say he's going to come in the league and catch 100 balls as a rookie. You know, that depends on a number of factors. But if you're looking at him solely for his receiving skills and traits and the fact that he can line up anywhere in the formation, then he's a really high-level prospect.
It's funny because I got a couple follow-up questions. You know, I did a Georgia game this year against Vanderbilt. It was actually the game, Greg, he got hurt in.
Right.
But I studied him, obviously, the couple games before. I think they played Auburn and somebody else. And, you know, one of the things I think is interesting is in terms of body type and some of the things they do, to me, he was like a more athletic, more explosive Sam Laporta.
Yeah.
You know, like I saw some similarities in terms of the route running, the hands, the size with Laporta. I just don't think Laporta has Bowers sort of run after the catch. So when I hear you say, I don't know if he'll catch 100 balls, I first thought, well, Laporta just set the record with however
right,
many he caught in Detroit. And I don't, you know, I'm not saying Bowers is going to do that.
Right.
But he's kind of reminds me of Laporta. Just, I think he gives you more explosiveness, more run after the catch.
And I agree. And don't forget, Laporta came from Iowa, where he was asked, obviously, to line up as an attached tight end and block. So he had that in his background. Now, by the way, Georgia does that. I mean, you know, you studied Georgia, you did the game. Georgia does line up and play what would be viewed as NFL-type football with the quarterback under center in a run game. So he was asked to do that. And as I said, I think he'll get better and better at it just because he'll work at it. But yes, Laporta had the big year. Also, Laporta played in one of the best and most well-schemed passing offenses in the NFL. We don't know where Bowers will go. But Bowers is a more explosive athlete than Laporta.
The other question I had to ask you about this while we're on the tight ends, Greg, you know, I've seen a number of times it written, it said, you know, probably not a top 10 pick because of positional value. And I understand, Greg, that there are some economics that go into that, right? You know, you see what receivers and left tackles and some of these positions are getting paid. And so if you have a guy on a rookie contract, you're getting more value out of that as opposed to what tight ends get paid. But man, I mean, you watch like the conference championship games and you see Travis Kelce and George Kittle and Mark Andrews,
yep,
and even Isaiah Likely and certainly Laporta, who we were talking about. I mean, I think tight end is a very, very important position in today's NFL. And I think in particular, a tight end like Bowers is a huge offensive weapon, movable chess piece, whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
So I struggle when I see people say, well, shouldn't take him in the top 10. I mean, where would Travis Kelce go if he was in the draft, you know, like 10 years ago? I mean, that is a little bit, I am more of the Brad Holmes philosophy of let's take really good football players, I guess, than getting too caught up in positional value. If you know Brock Bowers is going to be a high-level player at that position for the next 10 years, why wouldn't you take him in the top 10?
And I think you made a great point. I think where the NFL has moved to offensively, for the most part, obviously maybe not every single team, but for the most part, and it's trending in this direction even more, is the fact that receivers now, and let's include tight end as receivers because those are the ones that are drafted higher. No one's drafting tight ends because they can block defensive ends. Is the fact that teams line up all their receivers, including tight ends, all over the formation. It's not like it was years ago where there is a defined X, a defined Z, a defined slot, and a tight end only lines up in one or two spots. The passing game has clearly evolved and morphed into where tight ends line up anywhere in the formation. They're receiving weapons as opposed to tight ends. And Bowers may be the best we've seen come into the league in that category.
Any other tight ends that really stand out to you? It looks like, you know, just based on some of the rankings, the only other guy that seems likely to go in the first two rounds is Jatavion Sanders from Texas.
Yeah, I liked him a lot as well. I mean, he's another guy. He has extensive experience in Steve Sarkisian's offense of lining up in multiple locations. He's got really, really good hands. He made a lot of tough catches away from his frame. He's another guy that's a three-level dimension, not the same level as Bowers, but this guy could be a really good tight end in the league. I mean, he can work the vertical seam. He can run intermediate movement routes in which he runs away from man coverage or works effectively into zone voids. He can, I believe, line up at boundary X, meaning the single receiver on the backside of trips. I think he can do that eventually. I think he can be develop in time into a number one tight end. He'll probably begin his career as the second tight end on a team until he gets a feel for the NFL game. But I think that he has pretty high level traits.
Yeah, I mean, wow, Texas, between Xavier Worthy and I know how much you like Mitchell, the other receiver, yeah, and Sanders and Quinn Ewers. No wonder they had a pretty good team this year.
Yeah, so those would be the two tight ends that really stand out to me when I watch tape.
Before we move on to the running backs, Greg, I want to make sure everyone understands that this weekend, Sweet 16, starting tonight, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. It's delicious beer. Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Okay, let's get to the running backs, Greg. And we talked about this a little bit last week as we broke down some of the big free agent moves like Saquon Barkley to the Eagles.
Yeah.
But it's not thought to be a great draft for running backs. I don't know if that's what you saw or that's what you think, but I guess based on all the veterans that got contracts and some of the money they got, that it doesn't seem like teams are believing they can necessarily get their starting running back out of the draft, perhaps like some teams did last year with Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, etc. What did you think? I know it's kind of hard to compare years to year, but what do you think of the running backs as a group, Greg?
You know, I actually think they're pretty good. Now, again, you know, the running back position has become one of those positions where just people have this sense that running backs are not as important, that it's not a premium position in today's NFL because of the focus on the quarterback and the pass game. And then we get to games, particularly with good teams, when they get later in the season into the playoffs, and then everybody says, well, you got to be able to run the ball. So, you know, again, that's a different debate and argument for another time. I would guess that in this particular draft, no running back would be viewed as special, and I don't think you'll see a running back taken in the first round, but I think there are some really good backs in this draft who are going to play in the league and play at a pretty good level. Then it becomes dependent on team and scheme as to how they're deployed.
Is there anybody that in particular that really jumped out to you?
Well, some jumped out in different ways. You know, I'm going to throw out a name right off the bat that is not being talked about a lot. And I actually watched him this week. Okay. It just worked out that way. I knew absolutely nothing about this guy other than I saw him at the combine. And by the way, his workout at the combine was outstanding and I knew nothing about him. And he only he played 6 years in college and the most carries he ever had in one season was this past year. And it was 113. Yet he was invited to the combine. And the back I'm talking about is Tyrone Tracy from Purdue. Not a name you're hearing a lot about, but I thought he was a fascinating watch. He's 5'11", 209, so he's not a small little guy. And he's got tremendous natural quickness. He's really loose-hipped. He's got burst. He's got explosiveness. He showed patience and vision. He understood how to tempo his path to read his offensive line blocks. I just really liked this guy on tape. I'm really curious to see how he's seen by the league, you know, because my guess is he's not a quote-unquote feature back in that sense. I think he can be deployed in the same way that Jahmyr Gibbs can be. Now, again, I don't want people listening to this to hear that, well, he's Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm talking about how, you know, scheme adaptability, Ross, how a guy can be deployed in the league. That's what I'm talking about, because that's the way coaches think. You know that. You know that's coaches. The scouts think in terms of traits, attributes, characteristics. Coaches think in terms of scheme adaptability. How does he fit into what I do? And I think that Tracy can be the kind of back, you know, the way that Gibbs is used, the way that Kamara is kind of used, that kind of back who you're not necessarily going to give the ball to 200 times. Maybe he gets 130 carries, but he's a really good receiver, and he really stood out in pass protection.
Wow. Doesn't happen very often, Greg. I never even heard of him. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I've heard of, I think, most of these running backs, Brooks and Benson and Braylon Allen and Jalen Wright, Bucky Irving, obviously Blake Corum from Michigan, Ray Davis, Estime from Notre Dame. I had not heard of Tyrone Tracy. I love it. I'm glad I didn't just start asking you about
guys. That's why I wanted to mention him first, because I know those other backs, and we can talk about whichever one you want to talk about. I've seen all those guys as well. But Tracy really jumped out to me, and I think he fits the NFL, you know, really well.
That's awesome. Of the other guys I mentioned, is there another guy that, for whatever reason, you really like? Maybe the guys I have.
I tell you, the guy that fascinates me the most is, and you know, again, this is just me. Okay, there's two guys that fascinate me the most. One is Trey Benson. Benson is 216 pounds now, and let's forget about the fact that he ran a 4.39. At the combine, which of course is just ridiculous. You know, you watch his tape, and ultimately he's just a guy that I think to myself, boy, he's got that kind of size, 216. He can take it to the house. I mean, you're talking about a guy that has a desired combination of sustaining traits, because he's got a strong frame. He's an aggressive, relentless runner. He's got really good contact balance and natural power, but he's got that difference-making burst and top-end speed. You don't see that a lot. Now, you wouldn't call him elusive. You wouldn't call him shifty. He can be a little upright. I mean, it's not as if he's a 100% perfect prospect or he'd be talked about as a first-round pick. But you don't see a lot of 216-pound backs with the kind of accelerating top-end speed that this guy brings to the table. And when you watch his tape, he has a lot of long runs.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, I had heard a bunch about him. What do you think about a guy like Braylon Allen, you know, after watching what he did at Wisconsin with his size, Greg?
Yeah, I watched him last summer, and I watched him this year, and I struggled with him on tape. You know, there was a flash here and there where you saw some burst, some explosiveness, where he generated speed and velocity. You know, he is 235 pounds. He did not run like a 235-pound back. He did not run with a lot of power, given his size. He's a little straight line and stiff. I don't think he's particularly agile. You know, he's a very straight line linear runner. Now he's got some speed if he hits it and gets past the first level of the defense and cleanly gets to the second and third level. But he's a true north-south downhill runner who at this point, based on his college tape, Ross, needs the hole to be defined and a clear runway to maximize his running traits. He needs to become a more physical runner. He needs to be much better in confined space to develop into, you know, a primary back, because at 235, he's not a scat back. He's not going to be a third down back. He's going to have to be a primary type back. And I don't think that shows up on tape enough to say that, hey, that's what he can do.
Yeah, it's a red flag for me when you say he doesn't run like a 235 pound back, because I think sometimes these guys don't really know who they are or what they are or what they should be. I feel like it took a year and a half maybe for Najee Harris to kind of figure that out, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing too is, and to defend Allen a little bit, is he went to Wisconsin as a linebacker and they made him a running back. So he doesn't have a lot of experience as a runner, and I think that shows. You know, again, I hate to use the word instinct because it's one of those words that can mean a ton of different things to different people, but you can tell that he just doesn't really have a feel for how to run. He's a big man with straight line speed, but he doesn't really have a feel for how to run.
What about some of these bigger name guys like Blake Corum from Michigan, Greg?
Yeah, Corum's... he's a fun watch, Ross, because Corum, to me, he knows how to run. I mean, he has a great feel for understanding his blocking scheme, for understanding how gaps change when the ball snapped, for understanding defensive flow. And when I say understand, all this is innate. You know, you're not mapping this out like you're taking a test. You just see it. He has a great natural feel for all that. He's just not particularly athletic when it comes to running the football, but he just knows how to run. You know, I watched him and I thought of two guys. And again, you know how it is with me, Ross. I don't sit around and think, who does a guy remind me of? They either remind me of someone or they don't. But two guys kind of popped into my head, and I don't think either one would be considered, you know, having high level traits, but both have had success in the league. So it comes down to how you're deployed. The two guys I thought of watching Corum were Devin Singletary. The size and weight is almost exactly the same. And the other guy I thought of was Kyren Williams, who had a great year with the Rams, but is not a super high-level traits runner, but he's another guy that just knows how to run.
Interesting. Well, Kyren Williams went to Notre Dame. I did want to ask you about Audric Estime from Notre Dame.
Yeah, Estime is an interesting guy because he's another big back. And, you know, Estime was 221. He did not run well at all at the combine, but he plays much faster. He's a naturally powerful runner. He's got strong finishing traits. He gets hard yards inside. And that's always of value in the league. You know that, Ross. You played O-line. You know, obviously in the NFL, there's not a lot of 60-yard touchdown runs. And you know the value of those backs that when it's blocked for three, they get six. That might not seem a lot to fans, but that's a big deal, as you know. You know that really well, how important that is. And Estime is that kind of back. He's a hard runner. Now, he's a little stiff. You wouldn't say he's shifty and elusive. He did have some big runs, though. As I said, his game speed is much faster than his time speed, which was poor. I said he was a master of the 6 to 9 yard run with his vision, his contact balance, and his finishing traits. The more I watched him, I kind of liked him. I mean, He's that physical sustaining presence as a runner. He's got an attitude. He's got a swagger. And like I said, you know how important it is when your back is a physical runner that sort of brings an attitude and a tempo to your offense.
Greg, you bring an attitude and a tempo to your segment every week. I love it. Check him out on social media at Greg Cosell. He is the man. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Ross.
Awesome stuff from Greg. I love Greg. I love that March Madness is back, and I love my friends at Good Ranchers. You know what the real madness is? Trying to find quality, affordable American meat at the grocery store. That's why now I get all my meat delivered from Good Ranchers. Number one American meat delivery in the U.S. 100% American beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood to your door. Let's be honest. When you go to the store, you end up parking however far away. You don't even know what's in the meat that you're buying at the grocery store. You don't stop the meat madness with March Meatness at GoodRanchers.com. Right now, during their March Meatness event, Good Ranchers is offering you free jumbo chicken wings for a year with any subscription. Think about that. Dinners, game time favorites, grill out staples, 2 pounds of free wings you'll get in each box when you subscribe. So that's $150 value of free wings, plus an additional $20 off with my code Ross at goodranchers.com today. Take the ick out of chicken. Every piece comes from an NAE program. No antibiotics ever. Go to goodranchers.com, use my code Ross, get your free wings for a year, $20 off, and free shipping today. Goodranchers.com, code Ross, to enjoy March Meatness savings. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
Tuck's Takes.
All right, Ross, some contract news. Panthers signed 2-year, $20 million deal with defensive end Jadeveon Clowney, while wide receiver Josh Reynolds heads to the Denver Broncos.
It's so funny, I had just come out with that article about how Clowney, you know, was one of the best free agents still available. I can't remember the last time Clowney actually went to training camp or the start of training camp, Jack. So they needed to pay him to show up that early. Good for him, by the way. It's a lot more money than he made last year.
Some not good news around the league. Eagle exec Jake Rosenberg's leaving the team. Offensive tackle for the Saints, Ryan Ramczyk, is having a major knee issue. And quarterback Dak Prescott for the Cowboys is likely to play his final year on his contract.
The Ramczyk thing, if they're saying this in March, that does not sound good. As for Rosenberg, I think it's interesting that he's leaving the team with the goal of being a GM somewhere else. It's usually easier to get those jobs when you're with a team. And the Dak thing, I don't know what the deal is with the Cowboys. They have so many advantages from a financial standpoint. They're the richest team. They make the most money. And yet they have screwed up so many of these contracts by waiting to do them. It is absolutely mind-boggling. I'd be furious if I were a Cowboys fan. Other than that, I think we're done here.
Thanks for tuning in to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also check out Even Money, Fantasy Feast, and College Draft, all on the DraftKings Network on Samsung TV Plus, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.
Shout out MyFrontPageStory.com. I'm telling you, birthdays, a lot of people have anniversaries coming up. It is by far, the best gift you could ever get a loved one. MyFrontPageStory.com. How about BackOfficeSchedule.com, SteakhouseSports.com, HumanHeadNYC.com, Sporticulture, and Pizza Boy Brewing.